And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. The accused killer of United Healthcare's CEO will remain jailed in Altoona, Pennsylvania. He's fighting his extradition to New York, and says CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Mangione was denied bail. No surprise there. It doesn't matter that he has no criminal record. He has already demonstrated he is a flight risk, and he is wanted for what might be first-degree premeditated murder.
CBS's Anna Schechter on the evidence police found when they arrested Luigi Mangione.
The clothing that was found on his person in Altoona, Pennsylvania, matched that of what the shooter was wearing, so there's that. He also presented the local police with this very same fake New Jersey driver's license that he used to check into that hostel on the Upper West Side.
They also found three handwritten pages where Mangione acknowledges his actions and describes his anger at corporate America. CBS News Special Report. I'm Peter King.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear a Wisconsin case about school policies on gender. Savannah Tomei Olson explains.
It all started when the Eau Claire Area School District updated their policy to say that if a child wants to be addressed by a different name or pronoun, staff would respect that and would not have to notify parents without the student's consent. Advocates for LGBTQIA youth say that can protect queer kids whose families may not understand them. But a group of parents represented by the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty sued the school district. They claim the policy usurps their rights as parents. Luke Berg, representing the families who filed that lawsuit.
This can do harm to children, and in our view, that's why parents need to be involved.
Meanwhile, Haley Archer, attorney for the Wisconsin ACLU, says it's not a black and white issue.
I believe one of the reasons that this question is debated is because it is complex. We're balancing the rights of parents, we're balancing the rights of schools, we're balancing the rights of students, and ultimately, the safety of the student is, in my opinion, the most important of these rights.
The Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health reports nearly half of LGBTQIA youth in the state seriously consider suicide. Nationally, those rates drop significantly for trans and non-binary kids who feel accepted at home, according to the Trevor Project. Now, this lawsuit had been dismissed twice before. Judges said while the parents are genuinely concerned, the policy has not impacted them or their kids, so the suit had no standing. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty tried again. They asked the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case. The nation's highest court only accepts less than 1% of the cases that are referred to it. The U.S. Supreme Court announced that it had rejected the parents' appeal, meaning they would not hear the case and the rulings from the lower courts stand. So there's really nowhere else for the case to go.
I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
Badgers losing their quarterback. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football, the Badgers' starting quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, has announced he's entered the transfer portal. Van Dyke suffered a torn ACL in his right knee, week three, ending his season. He was replaced by Braden Locke. Wisconsin has hired a new offensive coordinator, 58-year-old Jeff Grimes, most recently with Kansas. NBA, the Bucks host the Magic tonight in Milwaukee. It's an NBA Cup quarterfinal game. Major League Baseball meetings underway in Dallas. The Brewers say that Christian Yelich, making progress from his back surgery. Manager Pat Murphy on shortstop Willy Adames leaving the team in free agency after signing with the Giants.
Willy, the guy can play, man. You want the ball hit to him in a big situation. You want him at the plate. He plays every day and you want him up in every big situation. He's proven it time and time again. That's who he is. He loves it. He revels in it. I mean, we've lost a lot. We lost Burns. We lost Hader in the recent years. But losing this guy.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hi, I'm Ashley, your marketing consultant here at WFHR and WIRI, and I am here to help local businesses big and small. I want to wish everyone a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas.
Cloudy and calm before the storm. High temperatures today were already hit early this morning and are slowly sliding to the teens tonight. With a few flurries flying around overnight, snow is likely tomorrow morning. With less than an inch expected, winds will be blustery and temperatures plummeting. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 26 degrees at our studios.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
This is Melissa Kay, and we have a special live show planned for Community Stories on December 17th and 19th. It's a live call-in show from 5 to 6, where you can call 715-424-2600, and I'll connect you with the ELF call center.
Elves, Santa's really busy. Can you go on the radio?
Absolutely. I can stand in for Santa.
Good, too, when you said that.
That's 715-424-2600 on 97FM, 1320 AM, and 105.5 FM.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome wrestling announcer and Civic Media's own Rich Lucchesio, Swedish jazz queen Gunhild Carling, and Northeast Wisconsin author Brett Kissinger. Let's light it up like it's a school night.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I'm only happy when it rains.
What is up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Networks. Thanks to each and every one of you for what was a lively discussion about if it was your best friend or kid who shot the United Healthcare CEO, would you turn him in? It's a difficult question. Just want to finish that up with some of your last texts and comments. A texter from WLCX saying, there is an answer to this. It is Medicare for all. Bernie Sanders has been talking about it. For years, we're the only Western democracy where people have to file bankruptcy because they can't afford their health care. John from Oshkosh saying, it is a tough call. My mom had to ration some of her meds and go without others the last 2 months of the year because insurance companies want more record profits rather than living up to the obligations of someone who has paid for insurance for 50 years. Corporate America is as corrupt as anything. Money is the root of all evil. Thank you all for a great conversation. We'll have more breaking news about Mr. Mangiano at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I've got a great guest to help us answer what is a very important question here in the state of Wisconsin, because politicians have been telling us some conflicting things about what our tax burden looks like. And are we actually getting what we think we're getting out of it? My next guest is the executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. His name is Jason Stein. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jason. I always like to begin with thank you for all the work that the Policy Forum does. We are very blessed in this state to have you all helping us understand the important questions of the day. Help us understand where Wisconsin's tax burden sits in the moment today as compared to other states. And then we'll talk about sort of the backward looking. We'll talk about education funding. We'll get the full picture for people. But help set the stage. Where is our tax burden relative to other states?
Sure. And by tax burden, all we mean is you take all the state and local taxes in Wisconsin that are paid each year, and then you divide it by personal income. So the people's ability to pay those taxes. And what we found when we looked at it was that in the most recent national data on this, Wisconsin's tax burden has now dropped to just below 10%, 9.9%, and we rank nationally 35th. Now well into the bottom states, well below the national average, which is at 11.1%, which is a big change from where we were at a generation ago.
This is always a very interesting question to me, Jason, because one, understanding the relative burdens is important, but it's not the whole story. Has, in fact, Wisconsin's tax burden, if you will, again, the aggregate of all local and state taxes together, has it indeed been trending downwards, or is this a reflection of a national trend where tax burdens are coming down? Which direction is the trend line moving on this here in Wisconsin?
Sure. So there is a national downward trend, but Wisconsin is, our burden is declining more than that. So in the year 2000, our tax burden was at 12.5%, and we ranked third highest nationally at that time. you know, again, in 2022, which is the most recent national data we have, 9.9% in Wisconsin, and we rank 35th. So that's a bigger drop than any other state has seen in its tax burden over that period. So it's, you know, this is very unusual what has happened in our state. And it has also, there have been some trade-offs that have come with this. So if you look at our education funding, you know, we would have been eighth highest in the nation in 2000, and in 2022, we were 31st. So, you know, those two things have moved together, which is not surprising because education is, the K-12 education is the largest single expense at both the state and local level.
To me, fascinating, and it's no accident either, then I could infer, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this explosion of school funding referenda that we've seen across the state, to many of us, it feels like every election cycle, our school district is asking for money, is again a reflection and the predictable result in the fastest overall decline in tax burden in the nation as measured against 2000 as a baseline. Is that a fair inference to draw?
I think that's fair. If you look at our website, and all these reports are available for on our website for free at wispolicyforum.org, you can see we have one recent brief on the tax burden and another one on the November referenda that were on the ballot. And there we found that in 2024, they're going to be 241 school referenda, and that was the most held on record. We've had you know, a very large number of referenda approved in 2024. The approval rate is down a little bit from the last even numbered election year, which is kind of how we compare these things, but you know, still very large dollar amounts. We saw, you know, earlier in the year, very large $252 million referenda in Milwaukee Public Schools. And then later this fall in Madison, we had $100 million operating and more than $500 million capital referenda, which both of those passed. So, you know, very significant ballot initiatives that have come forward this year. And we do also see those on the actual bills that are going out in December. If you look at the gross property tax levies for K-12 school districts, those are going to rise by the most since 2009.
Wow. So we're going to see that on our property tax bills going up the most since 2009. It's a really interesting, I would call it like funding shift, right? From if you can maybe even conceptualize it in this light, that in the past, especially our biggest cities, of course, economic engines, educating a lot of the workforce for the state, a shared funding burden with all Wisconsinites, now very much shifting to a localized funding burden through these referenda. And yet it seems that school districts, it doesn't matter where your district is. I don't know a school district in the state, rural or urban or otherwise, that feels comfortable about their funding level, especially in the post-pandemic environment where student needs are so much more complex and demanding, especially in the mental health and emotional sphere. I wanted to also ask you this, as people assess our tax burdens on a relative basis, and as they look at the decreasing in education funding, what should people expect going into this next biennial budget debate that we're going to see at the state level? Because you already see the sort of teeing off of the issue between DPI Superintendent Jill Underley and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. What can people anticipate? What should we be getting ourselves ready for in terms of the 2025 budget debate?
It's a good question. You know, the state in June 30th of this year closed its fiscal year with a $4.6 billion balance in its main fund, its general fund. And so you're seeing a lot of jockeying among different interest groups for how that money would be divvied up in terms of spending increases or tax cuts. From our perspective, and we put out another recent brief about this, it's important to note that although the state really has a very strong budget, it is possible, because right now the state has a lot in the bank, so to speak, but is spending more than it's taking in, actually, at this time and in this fiscal year. And so, you know, as we think about ongoing permanent spending increases for education or income tax cuts, some of the things that the two parties have both, you know, jockeyed for, those are going to add up pretty quickly in terms of the amount we have in the state budget. Now, if you look at one-time expenses, like, let's say, paying for capital projects for the state with cash instead of with debt, there's a lot more room to do those kind of one-time spending measures, or I guess a one-time tax rebate if that was your preference. But the ongoing state budget may be a little bit tighter over the next spring and summer than some people might expect, just given the headlines about these very large state surpluses.
So is it accurate when we hear someone say we've made in the last biennial state budget the single largest investment in public education in a generation? Is that a factually accurate statement from the policy forum's perspective?
I have heard those kinds of statements be made. I have not evaluated that claim, so I don't want to weigh in on it. I will say sometimes those numbers are not adjusted for inflation.
Yes.
And, you know, we have recently had inflation.
A little bit of inflation, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, if you're going to evaluate those claims, you should check and see if they've been adjusted for inflation.
Because if we adjust and understand the trend in education funding over this period of time, say from 2000 to 2022, and you account for inflation, our increases are even smaller because, again, it's not on an absolute dollar basis. Is that fair to say? I don't want to misrepresent the data points here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the challenges that school districts are having right now is in the 24-25 school year, number one, the federal pandemic aid has run out. So last year was sort of the last year to get that. And then number two, a lot of districts, in particular, the Milwaukee Public Schools are coping with pretty significant enrollment losses, and their funding model is built off the number of students that they have. So, you know, if there's a declining enrollment, you know, over, you know, which is certainly the case for most public school districts since the, you know, pre-pandemic, let's say 2019 to now, that's a real crunch because, you know, they have certain fixed costs, you know. And if they're going to cut those fixed costs by, like, let's say, closing a school building or closing a location, that is a difficult conversation to have, and not something that you can do overnight if the policymakers choose to do it at all. So those are some of the things that schools are grappling with.
And Jason, if you know, I heard someone mention that we haven't updated our public school funding formula, which is used in quite a long time. Do you know the last time that funding formula was updated or looked at?
Yeah, that's a good question, Maggie. I mean, there are changes that get made around the edges to that. And certainly there's been a lot of changes to school revenue limits that limit the amount of money that school districts in Wisconsin can take in from general school aid and local property taxes. But in terms of the formula used to distribute state general school aids, you know, I've been knocking around the Capitol for 20 years, and I wouldn't say over that period there's been a real major overhaul of that formula.
Yeah, which itself is fascinating given all the technological changes over this period. When we come back, hey, do you know if you have a lead lateral? Are you in one of the communities with the most lead laterals? We'll discuss that with Jason Stein, Executive Director of the Policy Forum.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you follow the American Democracy Minute, you know that until last year, Wisconsin held the infamous title as one of the most gerrymandered states in the U.S. That changed November 5th. Former Governor Scott Walker accelerated gerrymandering of the Wisconsin Assembly, Senate, and congressional maps during his 2011 to 2019 tenure, engineering a 64-35 majority in the Wisconsin Assembly and a 22-11 majority in the Senate, despite an evenly divided liberal and conservative electorate. In 2023, the GOP was short of a supermajority by only 2 assembly seats. Vetoes by current Governor Tony Evers tried to keep even worse maps at bay, but a conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court ultimately allowed them. But a Supreme Court election in 2023 shifted the ideology of the court, and the court's reconsideration of the Assembly and Senate maps led to new, fairer maps for the 2024 general election. While Republicans maintain control of both houses, fair maps reduce the artificial Republican advantage in the Assembly, 54-45, and the Senate, 18-15. Veto overrides of the governor are far less likely, forcing the legislature to compromise on more legislation. The congressional district map, which did not change but is also widely recognized as gerrymandered, gave a 6-2 advantage to Republicans. We have links to local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Did you know that our Pet of the Week show on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR has helped over 100 animals find their forever homes by connecting with listeners? This is only made possible due to local area businesses, and we hope to help 100 more. Listen to 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR Pet of the Week on Thursdays at 9 AM and find that special friend you've been looking for, or learn how you can help with current needs. Made possible by sponsors like you, who help keep this program running for all of the animals in this community.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Everybody, it's Tuesday, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm an attorney and economist. You can find me here on your local Civic Media talk radio station from 2 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, trying to make sense of all the gosh darn noise. And this headline certainly jumped out at me based on my very special guest's work at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. His name is Jason Stein. He's the executive director over there. And Jason, you all dropped a report, I think a couple weeks ago, about the question, the problem, the concern over lead laterals that connect basically municipal water sources to individual homeowners' internal plumbing. Now, everybody in the state of Wisconsin, frankly, has heard about the lead lateral crisis in Milwaukee, but your report certainly made some waves because a couple of other communities, I think, we're caught somewhat unawares to find themselves at the top of the list for the percentage of lead laterals in their community. Tell us more, Jason.
Sure. And this report, actually, we put out about a year ago. So it was about November of 2023. But it's been getting some renewed attention because, you know, as it sort of underlines the issue that these things do not go away quickly or even, you know, anything but very, very slowly. Let's put it that way. So we looked at data that was available from the state on these lead laterals, which, as you say, are the lines that carry water from the main in the street into your home or into your business or apartment building. And these lines, yeah, we found that, you know, again, there are nearly 100 communities around the state that have lead laterals to some greater or lesser degree. And, you know, in certain communities that were, let's say, built before the Great Depression, you know, built before the 1930s, they can be very common. And even, you know, you see some, you know, you might even have cases where you have communities where more than half of the laterals can be lead. And again, sometimes the data on this, people need to understand, the data is not perfect. I think if people stop and think about it, they say, okay, we got this house. It was built in Whitefish Bay. It was built in Sherwood 100 years ago. How perfect is the data on what the lateral for that house is? Yeah, it's not perfect, right? And I think if people stop and think about it, they wouldn't be surprised about that. But it is an important issue. And you do have some communities like Whitefish Bay and Sherwood that are, you know, well-to-do communities. And people might think, oh, there wouldn't be a problem like that in a community like that. But, it, you know, there are also communities that were built, you know, many of the structures were built a long time ago. And this is just an issue that crops up. And it takes time to resolve. And it also is a tricky financing thing, because if you think about that lateral, typically half of it is owned by the municipality, the half that goes partway from the main to the house, and then the other half is owned by the home or the property owner. And so, you know, the city, when they're, let's say they're replacing an old water main in the street, or they're doing work on that street and they've got everything torn up, they want to come in and also replace the laterals. But then there is this cost to replacing the homeowner's portion. And it's tricky to just say, well, people would say, okay, well, let's have the water utility pay for it. But where does the water utility get its money from? The water utility gets its money from the ratepayers. And in typical situations, it needs to, if it's expending money that is only for the benefit of one property, it can be tricky for that water utility to spend everyone's ratepayer dollars for that purpose.
It may, in fact, be illegal.
And so, you know, there have been things done at both the state and local level to make it easier to finance both the municipal and the private portions of these lead laterals. But this is an issue that takes, it took us decades to get here, Maggie, and it takes us years to get out of it as well.
As someone that has always been interested in public health and public policy, when these issues first started to come to light over a decade ago in the city of Milwaukee, I remember clocking this and thinking, this is one of those really complicated problems. The city had looked into subsidizing or underwriting loans to homeowners. I mean, it is just, there's the property lines, the whole lateral isn't owned by either the homeowner directly. I mean, there's just so many layers of complexity here. And I do want to just give this PSA to folks. In general, not all cases, unless there is some sort of infrastructural work that has disturbed the lateral, it is not always the case that your water is contaminated at a dangerous level simply because you have a lead lateral. If you think about this, it makes sense. There would have to be some agitation of the lateral that starts, or erosion on the inside that starts to actually sort of result in these microscopic bits of lead entering the water stream. So I don't want people in Whitefish Bay, I'm sure would freaking out.
Or a change in the chemistry of the water.
Yes.
Another thing that could lead to that. But yes, I mean, municipal officials who are on top of their game have ways that they can manage this issue and test and make sure that, you know, water is at safe levels. And you can also, even if you don't have a lead lateral, you can still have lead in the fittings of your pipes or your pipes within an older home as well. So, you know, there are multiple things that people have to be aware of. But this is a problem that was kind of long, I think, perceived by some people as a city of Milwaukee problem. But really, any place
in every
Superior, Wausau, what have it, that's a long-standing city can also have this issue.
You can find all of their work at wis.policyforum.org. He's Jason Stein, the executive director. Thank you so much, Jason. We're all smarter because of you. I appreciate your work. Please do give Rob Henkin my best. We come back, we've got some more breaking news about the Luigi Mangiano issue and arrest that is ongoing. I've got some data from the extradition hearing, some information, the arguments made there. I'm going to share that all with you right on the other side. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm your radio lawyer and economist. What I do isn't legal advice, though. Keep it locked.
Your You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Tome for the Todd Allball Show.
Thank you for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires on this Civic Media station. The Patriotic Millionaires are financial supporters through paid advertising on some Civic Media stations.
December's World Agriculture Supply and Demand Report came out today, and while December's report acts as a placeholder usually for the big one in January, there are still some key trends to watch, particularly in the corn market. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, says strong export sales and shipment numbers are bolstering demand.
You're expecting to see the carryover drop about 40 million bushels, 50 million bushels today. The big number in my mind is, do we get under 1.9 billion bushels of carryover? Do we stay just above it? The market's anticipating just slightly above it, so we'll have to see how that plays out. When you start getting into that 1.8s, 1.7s, and then we start seeing some maybe more price move, we'll have to see how that again, what the USDA puts together.
That's John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
At Golden Harvest, we know that to thrive in the wild north, you have to be built for it. Introducing the Hawk, the Grizzly, and the Wolf. Three corn hybrids bred for powerful performance. Like apex predators, Wild North hybrids are strong and fierce, ready to face the toughest agronomic threats and stand tall all season long. Enter the wild. Visit hybridsbuiltforthenorth.com.
Attention farmers and ranchers. The Can-Am Ag and Business Program wants to reward hardworking folks like you. Head to your local Can-Am dealer to find out how you can get extra coverage on top of a rebate of up to $1,500 on select Can-Am Defender and Outlander models. If you've had your eyes set on a Can-Am workhorse, now's the time to get your own. Visit your local Can-Am dealer to add a true game changer to your roster. Certain conditions apply. See dealer for details.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your Tuesday, December 10th closing markets. Cash corn is closed at 449. That was up 7 1/4. New crop corn closed at 441 3/4. That was up 2.5 cents. Cash beans closed at 994 3/4. That was up 4 3/4. And new crop beans closed at 1009 3/4. And that was up 5 cents. Cash wheat closed at 561 3/4. That was up 3 cents. And July 2025 new crop wheat closed at 577, and that was up 3 3/4. On the dairy side of things now, January Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1921 a hundredweight. That is down 16 cents. And February Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1927 a hundredweight, and that is down 6 cents. Barrel cheese closed today at 168 3/4, down 1/4. 40-pound black cheese had no change and closed at 173. And the AA butter also had no change and closed today at 253. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight, flurries and snow showers late, fluffing up to a dusting to less than an inch through tomorrow morning. Temps fall through the 20s tonight into the teens tomorrow as the wind picks up, dropping wind chills below zero as the sky clears. Much colder for Wednesday night and Thursday. Currently it's 26.
After raising the kids, having weddings, and getting them settled, my wife and I prepared to spend our very first Christmas alone. They were all at the in-laws this year, so we watched old videos of them growing up, went to bed early, and Christmas morning my wife said, "Let's never do that again."
We're on our own again this year, but we're actually looking forward to it because we rented a private vacation home in Alexandria, Minnesota. Lakes, shopping, restaurants, and new memories.
Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
Join our advertising family on WFHR and WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Fear you're missing out when you miss our conversations on air? You can always join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as Up North News radio host Pat Kreitlow and Trigby Olson, Packer owner and senior advisor at Lincoln Project, is here to discuss. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
everyday people. And right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, we, the everyday people, always endeavor to have great conversation. We started off today with a big whopper of a question, which was, would you turn in your son, daughter, or best friend if you had a suspicion that they were the CEO assassin caught on camera last week? Tons of different opinions. Thanks again, y'all. But I wanted to share some more of the breaking details coming out of the extradition hearing. Again, in Pennsylvania today, Mr. Luigi Mangione was in a hearing. And it was very interesting because he actually made statements to the court. I am certain that there was some assigned lawyer there for Mr. Mangione, but I'm pretty surprised that the lawyer let the guy talk at all. I'm also pretty surprised about his outburst going into the courtroom where he seemed to say something about unjust or injustice and then said it's an insult to the intelligence of the American people and their lived experience. But just to refresh our recollections, we covered some of this yesterday. But again, in the extradition hearing today, one of the things that prosecutors will do to make the argument that the defendant here, Mr. Mangione, should be moved from, Pennsylvania, the Altoona, Pennsylvania area, to New York City, where the murder occurred, they will review the evidence against the accused. This is one of those reasonableness judgments where these trial court judges have an incredible amount of discretion on whether to grant extradition motions. And usually there is some level of crime that has occurred in the judicial district where the defendant currently is. For example, he may very well be charged in Pennsylvania with some sort of gun crime because they arrested him with a ghost gun. This is one of those guns that you basically assemble at home, and that is illegal. So he may, in fact, get some criminal charges. He was, was charged with a gun charge in Pennsylvania. And so the trial court judge is looking at the seriousness of the alleged crime in the other jurisdiction. And in considering that, whether to keep him here in Pennsylvania or send him to New York, again, comparing the seriousness of the crimes, as well as the weight of the evidence that is known to date against the defendant, i.e., does it appear that indeed there's probable cause for the arrest and charging and that there is substantial evidence that the person did it? So what we do have from today's hearing is a review of some of the bits of evidence that were found on Mr. Mangione's person. Really interesting stuff here and some new news, and you may have heard it here first. So we knew yesterday that there was some sort of written 3-page manifesto. We knew yesterday there was a ghost gun and a silencer. And we knew yesterday that he was in possession of an ID, a fake ID that used the same exact name that existed on a different fake ID that he used to check into the hostel where he stayed for 10 days leading up to the murder in New York City. So we knew all of that. Today we got some new information about what was said in the manifesto, and there was basically a line in there where I am sorry or I apologize for the strife and trauma this may cause, but these parasites had to pay. That being released into the media today, and again, discussed during the extradition hearing today, he was asked, do you have drug or mental health problems? By the judge, he answered, no. Mark this down, that he answered no today in the extradition hearing, because I am going to tell you what I think, in addition to arguing about the Terry stop, I think the defense is going to have to make some kind of argument surrounding mental health. And I'll give you some thoughts about the sort of tack that I think they're going to take in this eventual murder trial. So mark that down. He told the judge today, I have no drug or mental health problems. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Prosecutors, again, arguing both for extradition and that he should be held in custody without bail, i.e. not released. Also, we found out today that when he was detained and ultimately arrested, he had $8,000 in U.S. cash, $2,000 in foreign currency. He had his actual passport on him as well. And here's where it gets really interesting. He had with him what is called a Faraday bag. Now, if you've never heard about this, you can go down a huge rabbit hole about what these are and who uses them. But a Faraday bag is basically something that you can put at any electronic device in, read a cell phone, that will prevent the cell phone from being geolocated, from tracking the phone. So it is used by diplomats and intelligence people and law enforcement. Like your buddy from down the street that you see at the gym. Yeah, like regular folk ain't walking around with like a Faraday bag. That's just weird. And so very interestingly, the prosecutors today in this extradition hearing and the bail hearing made the argument that all of these facts, all of the things that he was found with, indicate a level of criminal sophistication, quote unquote, criminal sophistication. That was what they alleged. And very interesting enough, he responded in this hearing today saying, I don't know about criminal sophistication. He also claimed he did not know where this money had come from. And he claimed that this Faraday bag, he didn't even really understand that it was about blocking the geolocation possibilities that get emitted from a cell phone. I just thought it was a waterproof bag. That was what he was trying to sell to the court. I don't know about y'all, but I'm finding that a little bit hard to believe when the guy is a two-degree holding engineer from an Ivy League school. I mean, come on, man. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This is going to be a doozy of a case, y'all. Peg from Windsor, what's your thought this afternoon?
Peg, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'm calling about this killing of this United CEO, and I'm in the medical profession, and I have very negative feelings about insurance companies in general. And I think every single person has had a horrible experience. I'm in the middle of one right now. And you're waiting months and months and months to get a procedure done, to get a PT, to get an MRI. And people are recording things incorrectly in your chart. And you get a summary and say, I didn't say that. And it is like this is the opening of a can of worms, which we've all been wanting to do, because these HMO and insurance companies have been taking us to the laundry and taking our money, and Medicare doesn't know what's going on, I don't think.
Yeah, there's so much there, Peg. I've had claims denied after very traumatic injuries. I've had friends have to navigate the Badger Care field. I have friends laid off trying to get COBRA. I mean, everyone I know has a nightmare story about dealing with a health insurance company. And here's the thing, when I've had these experiences, right? Like, I'm a lawyer, I'm an economist, I know how to read fine print. And the amount of time that I had to dedicate to try to resolve the what I thought was wrong claim denials was like having a second full-time job. I also, anytime I talk to people about this, and again, this isn't legal advice, I can't give anybody legal advice on the radio, but you have to take like copious detailed notes. What's your name? Do you have an ID number? When did I talk to him? What time of day? Because they seem to forget, the insurers lose the information, all of this kind of stuff. But here's the rub. I would have very little sympathy for someone who has all of the privileges that wealthy, incredibly well-connected Ivy League people have when we don't extend the benefit of the doubt or the understanding of the frustration level to most regular folks who don't have any of those advantages, who commit crimes. In fact, crimes of much less severity. We have a tendency to throw the book at regular folks, and I'm really curious here how this is all going to transpire. And here's the tease, y'all. The defense attorneys for this young man are going to lean hard into some argument about his mental health. So that's why him saying today in this hearing, I don't have any drug issues, I don't have a mental health problem, is going to be a big deal. I think that's going to be their first natural tack. Now, maybe he directs his lawyers, I don't want you to make that argument, I don't have a mental health issue. But I think they're going to try to connect something about his level of pain, his frustration, extreme emotional disturbance, that kind of stuff. Folks, if you want to get your 2 cents in, a nickel, dime, or a quarter's worth, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Kat from Middleton, you are very patient, my friend. What do you got for us, Cardi? You might have to let her know that she's
Kat, you're on the line.
This is Karen.
Sorry about that, Karen. You're on the line.
Okay. Hi, Maggie. You know what? When I first heard this story, I had the feeling that he was a hired, they were going to just wipe him off and get him out of the country, kind of like a whistleblower type thing. But I also feel like he was meant to do this because Advantage plans, and I'm not sure if that's what, you know, United, whatever it is, the CEO from that, they carry those, but they are the wet dream for the Republicans, for all of us, Advantage plans, and they suck, because I sold Medicare supplements for Physicians Mutual, which is amazing if anybody has it, and I'm blessed, but I'm paying for it, you know. So it's like, I feel like this kid is this voice of so many of us, and if I had a child that was intelligent enough to do something like that, hell no, I wouldn't turn him in. I'd be kissing his feet.
Karen, so much there. First of all, to answer your question, yes, United Healthcare is a huge purveyor of Medicare Advantage plan. What is Medicare Advantage? If you don't know the terminology here, y'all, it's privatized Medicare. Huge, huge moneymaker for insurance companies. This is potentially why the shell casing said things like deny, defend, and depose. In other words, deny the claim, defend the lawsuit, and depose the insured to try to, again, perpetuate the denial of coverage. Thank you so much, Karen. Cardi, I can hear you on the air. Barbara from Madison, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Maggie. Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that he's not going to get... I mean, I don't condone what he did, but I think he's really making everybody aware. These insurance companies are ripping us off right and left, and the government is backing these Advantage. It isn't even Medicare. It's a fake, and it screws over people. So, I mean, I don't condone what he did, but in a way, he's almost a modern-day Robin Hood, you know?
I think that's the way some people are portraying this. And so the other question I have about how he's going to be defended is, do the lawyers effectively try to angle in on some sort of jury nullification like he might have done it, but acquit him anyways? So much more to discuss. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This great conversation continues on the other side. If you're on the lines, stay there. You will be next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you turn your best friend in? Question of the day, y'all. Keep it locked.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Our record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes. With limited incomes not keeping up with the lingering effects of inflation, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.kwwf.org.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
What's up, y'all? It is the last segment of the day. So this is the last shot, although I'm sure this topic ain't going anywhere fast, to get in your views about Mr. Luigi Mangiano. Would you have turned in your friend or family member? Do you think this guy's a modern-day Robin Hood, or is he a cold-blooded assassin, a guy that came from basically the highest level of privileges in this world, rich family, Ivy League education, had a job, Mr. Popular, got all the girls, was in a frat, huge network of friends and connections, political access. So why in the hell would we call that rich kid Robin Hood? He killed someone in cold blood. Or is our anger as Americans over this broken healthcare system feeling some sort of weird expression in what this guy did? And if we do find ourselves excusing him in some weird way, do we provide that same level of understanding to everyday people who do things that they never would have done otherwise because of similar financial extreme pressures, the failures of the system? Because I don't know that we do, y'all. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And to that point exactly, someone texting in from the 414 says this: I can't believe you all are justifying this. You people are real trash. A modern day Robin Hood? Are you out of your damn mind? Well, I invite you, caller, to call in and say it to me in your own words. Joe from Madison, it's your turn now. Do you turn in your best friend or your kid if they did this, or you thought they did?
It's very interesting. There were a large group of people who were very helpful to the FBI in locating some of the January 6 participants by analyzing computer images, and they really proved invaluable in terms of turning people in. They looked to these same people to help find this this person who killed the United Healthcare man, and people said uniformly, "No, thank you. I'm real busy. Gotta wash my hair. No time." I think the animosity that exists with good reason toward the insurance companies is the story here. And it's interesting, you were speaking of, this is not a man from poor circumstances. However, right, he is somebody that has something that I think a lot of people can understand, which is he did his first day surfing when he was in Hawaii. He was taking a break. And yes, he comes from great privilege, great wealth. He's also very smart, many degrees. But he took his first day surfing and he suffered a back injury. And this back injury was apparently so painful that he was unable to have sex. He could not be physically intimate with other people because he was just in such horrific pain. Pain changes things. You know, it's, you know, being sick and being unable to get insurance, that's all awful and terrible. But pain is a whole nother realm, I think. And there's a reason why there's a huge opioid industry. At any rate, I don't know, you know, what I would do in that circumstance. What I do know is that this particular incident has created, it's just like Yellowstone just blew up. I mean, I can't believe it. It's not only in the patient side, it's also on the doctor's side.
Yeah, it's. I know I have a number of friends who are doctors. They freaking hate insurance companies, too. They are endlessly frustrated by it. They are endlessly frustrated by coverage denials when they know their patients need care. I had dinner with a bunch of my friends that work in healthcare when Anthem Blue Cross was still saying they're going to basically meter the amount of anesthesia you can get. And my doctor friend was like, that's literally insane. Here's my question to all of you. I mean, fundamentally, at the end of the day, if this rich kid who had all of the resources in the world and could have bought any surgical procedure out of pocket, let's just say, if he was so desperate that he's killing somebody, he's assassinating someone, planning this out in detail, etching the shell casings, what the hell does that, where does that leave the rest of us, these everyday people, me and you? That's what is so, like, the desperation here from someone with so much, with all of the levers of access and power and money. And this guy was driven to the point of no return, wrote a manifesto. My gosh, what are the rest of us expected to do? Andrew from Sun Prairie, do you turn in your son or your best friend?
Yes. Yes. We've been told for all of our lives that murder is wrong. And this was murder. There's nothing you can say about that. Do insurance companies take advantage of people? Yes. We've been talking about insurance companies and changing the healthcare system for now going on 30 plus years. And we see no action. Our elected officials are still not taking action and helping the American people. So we're by the political system as well as these big corporations who are pumping money into the political system to screw us.
Well said, Andrew. Here's what I have to say about this, y'all. I would turn them in. And here's why. We are at such a dangerous point in our country. Do we slip into the abyss? We cannot allow vigilantism to take root. It was a crime, and he should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And we must take a deep look into ourselves and demand more of our politicians and our healthcare system. Money isn't speech. Corporations aren't people. The billionaire cabinet has got to go. I want a fair middle wage. I want taxes that work for the middle class and a healthcare system that works for each and every one of you. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Dom Salvia, up next with a little overtime.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Pat Kreitlow.
Wednesday on Up North News Radio, it's not too late to decide to run for a seat on your local school board. Here's what you'll need to do if you're interested in serving.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6. The holidays are here, and it's nearly time to pick a present from our grown-up gift list with our Civic Media statewide Text to Win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of our grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on our grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in our statewide contest.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report, a combative Luigi Mangione has had his day in court. Mangione railing against the system as he entered the courthouse in Altoona, Pennsylvania for his extradition hearing this afternoon. The accused killer of United Healthcare's CEO has been denied bail, and he's fighting extradition. CBS News legal analyst Lori Levinson.
Now, Mangione was none too happy about these court proceedings. In fact, lashed out that he thought it was unjust that he was being held. But that won't help him. He is going to get extradited as long as New York gets their paperwork in order. And they have 30 days to get their warrant down to Pennsylvania for the extradition.
Mangione faces murder charges, and police say they found several pieces of evidence linking him to the ambush killing of Brian Thompson last Wednesday. CBS News special report. I'm Peter King.
James here.